Hello, and welcome to How to Make a Memory, the show that explores the items we make for one another and how they impact our relationships. My name is Jen Tierney, and today I have a very special guest in the studio. I see him every day, but so far he's been spared from having to sit down in front of my microphone as the subject of one of my episodes.
I'm excited you decided to sit down with me, because it's...
Thank you for having me.
It's helpful, and it's exciting because I know you better than I know anyone alive on the planet, and so I feel like we could potentially have a very good conversation.
You probably know our kids better.
Than I know you? That's true, because I've known them their whole lives.
Yeah, and they don't have very long lives.
Yes, that's right. I do know them really well. That's a really good point.
That was me being judgmental.
You're being helpful, right? It's just you're helping. Correcting me on my own show. Thank you, husband.
That's right. My husband Joe is here to talk about the single greatest thing he's ever made for me and our family.
I make spreadsheets.
I know. This sounds like we're taking a one-way trip to Naptown. Once upon a time, I would have thought the same thing, but spreadsheets can tell astounding stories.
I make lots of different spreadsheets. Today we'll be talking about my family budget spreadsheet that has been ongoing since before we got married. Mm-hmm.
Before we dive into this shared budget and all that it's brought to our life together, I asked Joe to give me a little history into what inspired his love for spreadsheets, statistics, and tracking, which is particularly impressive considering this all began in a pre-wearables world.
My love of spreadsheets really started with tracking time and tracking things. Even in high school, I tracked what I did every day for an entire summer, but not in a diary way, just in a where was I and for how long. And I concluded that I spent more time at my friend Seth's house than I spent at my own house that summer. Then I took that love of spreadsheets to professional life as a structural engineer, which was more profitable.
Yeah.
But I've also kept track of different things along the way as a personal love and passion, like gas mileage and D&D sessions, the turn-to-turn dice rolling. I kept track of for entire campaigns. Yep.
So now that you understand Joe's humble spreadsheet beginnings, we can get into where I come into the picture and how spreadsheets became a critical part of our relationship.
Then it developed into a financial hobby because we moved in together right out of college. Mm-hmm. And with that, we needed to start sharing expenses.
Yes.
And we were both confident and adamant that we kept everything straightforward, not with the expectation that we weren't going to be together, but in the case that we did, we knew to the dollar how much each one of us owed the other.
At any given time.
At any given time.
Yep.
It started off also because I was unemployed out of school in 2008, right before the stock market crash. And I was in the negative.
You were
paying rent. And then I went on a trip to England with my bros.
Your bros?
By the end of the summer, in which I still, I had owed you good amount of money.
Yeah.
And then I got a job. Mm-hmm. But we kept up the spreadsheet. And then it got to a point when you owed me enough money that I needed to make the decision that, we're going to be together. So I should stop holding you to this.
This unimaginable amount of money.
Not unimaginable. It was a lot for, I mean.
It was a lot for then.
For then, yeah.
For now, it's not so bad. But yeah. But for then, it was, yeah.
But that was fun. Anyway, so then we started budgeting for our wedding, mm-hmm. which was our first, like, real collaboration on.
Oh, yeah. On a budget.
Like, and a, you know, a big one. Yes. As well. And that we had a lot of fun with. And you kind of gave me the reins to decide what could fit in the budget and how it would work. And that started our initial, like, that tug of war of someone in a couple. One person's going to want to spend more than the other. And it could be different on each mm-hmm. transaction. It could be in general. Mm-hmm. But there's going to be things that one person wants.
And yeah, there are certainly parts of yeah. our budget that you spend more on than I do, and yeah. vice versa. Yeah.
And through those conversations, you kind of figure out how that's going to work.
Yeah, it's all a negotiation, like a relationship negotiation.
Yeah, and just learning how to communicate that without being overly judgmental or be able to, you know, do that without... You know, without hiding things, mm-hmm. being able to do that without feeling overly criticized. Mm-hmm. All these things were challenges that came up. And once we got married, I started the family spreadsheet.
Yes.
That lives to this day.
Yes.
So we got married, our expenses truly combined, and things were going pretty smoothly. But what was the point of the budget now? What was all this for?
So each month I had each year I set out like our yearly expectations on how much we would make and how much we would spend on each category. Mm-hmm. And then each month I would adjust it based on upcoming expected expenses. Mm-hmm. And the reason that became important was because we were saving by a house.
Yes.
And saving 20% down in the Boston area. Mm-hmm. is a lot of money.
Yes, it is.
And so to do that, we would need it to be pretty knowledgeable about where our money was going and yes. where it was coming in.
So as you can probably tell, my husband is a pretty level-headed guy, and his version of making is very different from my previous guests. So I wanted to dig a bit further and see if he's more like my previous guests than he lets on.
So you've given a very thorough description of what the budget looks like and all of that stuff. And I think that it's good for you to go through that because it gives people an idea of the level of detail you go into and your personality in that it is very detail-oriented. You're very realistic and reasonable in how you plan these things. You want there to be reasons. You want there to be goals. But I think that the part that's most interesting to me and the part that we don't necessarily talk about as often is the why behind that. The podcast is very much about, like, you make a thing. That's great. Tell me a little bit about why you make that thing and why it's important to you and why it's important to other people. And I think that we just sort of started to touch on it in that we were saving for a house.
Yeah.
And the budget to me is valuable and important because of everything it has allowed us to do. And because we've been frugal and thoughtful and smart about what we're doing now and where we want to go into the future, we've been able to do a lot of things that I think we wouldn't have been able to had we not been planning and thinking critically about mm-hmm. what we were doing on a day-to-day and month-to-month basis. So I'm interested in, you know, sort of like the why behind the budget for you personally.
Yeah, so personally, it's a personal challenge. And there's nothing I love more than a personal challenge, something that I'm excited about, and it makes me excited to not only reach the goal. Actually, the goal really isn't as big of an excitement for me as the process mm-hmm. of how can we better manage our day-to-day expenses, or how can I better manage our monthly bills so that we can be the most efficient we can with the money that we have. Mm-hmm. that challenge is something I really enjoy, which is why I do it. And it's why most people don't. Because it is not rewarding in itself unless you enjoy that challenge, unless you enjoy that puzzle. It can be very daunting to look at your past spending, to have discussions about, you know, what that spending means for you and your partner and your family.
So it's interesting to me because I think that what I'm trying to pull out of you.
Yeah.
You know, what is your motivation behind the budget? What do you want to achieve with it? You know, where are we going? And what is this journey that we're on together? And it's funny because your personality and the things, like the cornerstones of who you are shining through in how you're presenting this.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I'm trying to get out of you anything other than, like, I do it because it's a challenge. I do it because it's hard. I do it because the process is interesting to me. And it's like...
Yeah, so, like, that makes me different from every other person you've had on.
Yes.
Is that everybody seems to be making things for other people. I just make things for myself. Well, not necessarily just for myself. It's for my satisfaction.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not... If other people enjoy it, that's great. Like, I'm happy that other people can enjoy the time I've spent on the budget. Like, that we've been able to buy our house, to have family, to send the kids to daycare. Like, those things also make me happy. But that's not why I do the spreadsheets.
Yeah. Those are sort of like icing on the cake, not like the cake itself.
Okay. Clearly, Joe is not a standard maker, and what he makes doesn't fit the same mold that many of our creations fit into. But what I started to realize as I spoke with Joe was that this episode isn't about what Joe's making means to him. It's about what it means to me.
When you first started tracking everything, I had a really hard time with feeling very restricted and feeling judged
vulnerable,
and that my money wasn't mine anymore and that I couldn't just make decisions for me. And the way that I came to terms with that and the way that I overcame those feelings was by seeing the outcome of how much more enjoyable and successful our lives could be because of the budget, because of this thing you were making me do. When it came time to buy a house, it was so much less stressful than the experience I had seen other people go through. You know, because we could put down 20%, we could get a better interest rate. Everything was easier and better. And because of that outcome, I went, the budget is amazing. I have to live by the budget. It's going to make everything in my life better. And I don't think it was until that moment that I really realized, like, oh, this is important and valuable. And it's good that Joe is making this.
Yeah. I do remember how many compliments we got from our mortgage broker.
Oh, yeah.
How prepared to 28, we were 28 when we were.
Yeah.
Yeah,
to 28 years old. And I remember you showed him the budget and he was beside himself. He was like, I've never seen anything like this.
Well, first of all, most people don't show him a budget. I just
you knew he'd appreciate it.
So I had read that a mortgage broker might like to see your budget to make sure that you can afford whatever you're trying to buy.
Yeah.
And he was just like, yeah, you can afford whatever you're doing.
Yeah. And that people had made far more risky choices financially and with home buying than what we were making. It made me feel confident. It made me feel like all of the choices we'd made up until that point had been worth it. I remember having this feeling when we were renting, and I remember feeling like I was making a good enough salary that I shouldn't be, as my mom calls it, living with 2 feet in one shoe. And I was like, oh, I should be able to go out to dinner whenever I want. I should be able to, you know, because I was making a reasonable salary and so were you. And I mean, it wasn't a ton of money, but it was it was certainly more money than I had when we were in college. And I was like, why aren't we just going out all the time and having, you know, and why am I not going out shopping whenever I want and buying things on Amazon as I please? Mm-hmm. And I think that it was because we hadn't had enough time of making good, smart choices for there to be something that I could see as the result of those choices. There wasn't anything yet that I could point to and go, see, this is why you're doing this. And now, having had two children and been able to, you know, continue working and send them to daycare and being able to support our family the way that we do, it's so obvious and clear why it was so important that we started as early as we did and made real conscious decisions every day.
When, the reason I told the story about how we started is because I didn't know any of this stuff then. Like, I didn't start it knowing that we were going to save to buy a house, or that we were going to be planning our wedding, or that we were going to use it as a tool to decide what makes us happiest in our lives. And that's something I, every year, I look at the budget and at each item and say, did this bring our family happiness for what it costs? Mm-hmm. And it's how I take things off, or, you know, increase budgets or make those kind of decisions. My goal isn't to be cheap. Mm-hmm. In most cases, it's to be frugal. But because if there's a thing that makes us happy, I want us to put money towards that. I want us to put as much as we feel comfortable putting towards it.
Yeah.
And I would recommend that to anyone.
Yeah.
But to do that, we went and cut out the things that weren't bringing us as much. Maybe they did bring us happiness.
They but did, just not as much.
Just
as...
not comparatively. And we also looked at how much time we spent doing those things. Mm-hmm. And if it's something we didn't do often, it was easy to get rid of. Or if we did a lot but didn't get a lot of value of.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that was very much the case for cable. Like, we were spending, I was spending just an obscene amount of time doing nothing but watching television when I got home from work. And the value was basically nothing.
Well, it was entertaining. It was
entertainment. That was it. There was, but I think that...
I mean, yeah, which is fine.
Yeah. Yeah, something it was fine for then. It was fine for then. But I think that when we cut it out, I realized pretty quickly that there were things that I could do with that time that had so much more value to me. And that's really when I started creating more. Like, before that, I wasn't creating because I was watching television. And then I started learning how to play the guitar. And I... started writing more, and, you know, that was when I was like, well, I can't just sit and waste my time in front of the TV now, so I can go and do things, and got to start figuring out what I wanted to be making, which was good.
That was a pretty powerful revelation for me. After several years of doing the budget, we had determined that the cost of cable and what it was bringing to our lives didn't fit into our equation for happiness. So out it went. And from there, my dedication to making kicked into high gear. I can thank the budget for giving me the time to do the things that I love most. All right, enough talk about the budget. Let's move on to something a little bit different. I wanted to know if there had been anything else Joe had made during the year that he felt particularly proud of. There was one specific thing that had come to my mind, a project that had meant a great deal to me, but I was curious to see if Joe felt it was notable enough to make the cut. It wasn't the first thing he remembered, but we got there eventually.
Did I fix the roof this year?
You did.
Yeah. I think that was pretty, I was pretty impressed by that.
You did a good job.
We had probably like a 5x5 area of the roof. Shingles got torn off in a windstorm. Mm-hmm. And I went up and repaired it.
You went up and repaired it.
Before it rained, before it rained.
Yeah, and I remember thinking to myself that this was probably really dangerous, and I should probably put my foot down and be like, no, you're not going to do this. But, I mean, because you were up there, it was, in the springtime, maybe. Still, like, the days were still pretty short.
It wasn't too cold, but it got dark.
And I hadn't finished yet. Yeah, and you had not finished, and it was, like, nearly pitch black out, and you were up there hammering shingles into the roof. And the kids were, like, about ready to go to bed, which tells you how late it was. And I was just beside myself. I was like, he's going to fall off and break his neck and either be paralyzed forever or die. And, okay, I guess I own this house alone now. Like, I immediately, my brain went from he's on the roof to he's off the roof and I have to plan a funeral. That's how quick my brain goes.
Worst case scenario mentality.
Yeah, it is. That's how my brain works.
But that was
it was very impressive. Trying to think
of what else I. Oh, you made the fence.
That's right.
That oh come on, we made the fence.
We did. We made a fence.
We made a fence to corral our children.
Our terrible, terrible children.
From running off into the road.
Yeah, we live on a very busy street.
Into the neighbor's garage.
Yes, our kids like to escape. And after years of requesting very nicely that we erect a fence.
But you were pretty adamant about the fence thing. And so we had to come up with a compromise. Mm-hmm. And
it was a semi-permanent fence solution.
Yeah, we came to a semi-permanent fence just right outside the backyard. Mm-hmm. It's like a large playpen.
It's a glorified playpen, yeah.
Yeah, glorified.
But it's a real fence.
Yeah.
And we really had to dig post holes and, it took days.
Yeah, the whole design of that was...
Yeah, because our backyard is on a slope, so it meant that all of the fence pieces that went in had to go in at different depths, and they had to all be leveled, and it was a very intense process.
Took a lot of time.
But let me ask you this.
What?
Since making that thing, how much better have our lives
been? I mean, much better. It's definitely worth it. I mean... If we didn't have the fence, the kids wouldn't go outside.
That's right. We couldn't allow them to go outside, ever.
I mean, they would, but it would have been very limited. Because they were going outside, and after about 10 minutes, they would be in another yard.
Yeah. And we just spent the entire time chasing them.
Yeah. So now we could go out, or we could send them out and work in the kitchen, which has a view over the...
Yeah. To me... It's given them more freedom, and it's given us more freedom, because now I can just open the door, keep the door to the backyard open, and they can come and go all summer long from the backyard. I mean, I'm always either on the porch or in the kitchen when I send them out, so I'm always, 15 seconds away at most from them should something happen, but to me, it provides enough of a visual barrier between them and I that I think they feel that they can explore and be a little bit mischievous and in ways that I think are really good for them that we didn't have before. I think that's been a really big part of it. I think Emma's, I don't know if it's just because she's gotten older and that's, what would have happened naturally anyway, but I think that this summer giving her that time to be independent was really good for her because I think she's much better with us and socially and just with herself than she was before the summertime, before the fence.
Since we're getting so close to the end of the year and the holiday season is upon us, I thought I'd be remiss to not ask Joe at least one holiday-themed question. In last year's Christmas episode, I spoke with my friend Rachel about making holiday traditions. And this year, Joe and I are diving headfirst into that journey.
So this year, for the first time, we'll be spending Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and the following day completely just the four of us.
Yeah.
And I think that we've always been somewhere else or somebody else has been with us, we've often deferred to other people's traditions and other people's plans. And, we kind of just go along for the ride. And so this year's the first year we get to really make it our own. And so I think that my history as a person, my childhood, has filled me with lots of ideas for different fun family traditions that we can adopt or continue. I think that that's a conversation you haven't been super willing to have up until now.
Yeah.
And so
I'm coming around to it more recently. I don't know why.
I don't know. Maybe you're just turning into a sappy old dad.
Yeah, I don't know where it came from. No, I'm trying to figure out why I was so against the idea of making traditions. I think it was more of a worst case scenario. Like, I don't like being forced to do things and then more specifically forced to do the same thing every year that I don't like. So I was really just like not looking forward to what those traditions could be. Mm-hmm. But then I started to consider that I could have input. Mm-hmm. And if I could have input, then I could more willing to go along. But your question was, what traditions am I looking forward to?
Is there a tradition that we haven't really started yet or that you used to do?
There's a tradition I've been thinking about recently. I haven't specifically shared it with you. Mm-hmm. That I want to institute Christmas Day.
Okay.
My favorite thing about Christmas is spending the day actually interacting with what you've opened mm-hmm. and with the people you've opened it with. Mm-hmm. My idea is to have a gift for each person that I can do with them and do that on Christmas Day.
Okay.
And this might come from like childhood angst, being pulled away from that activity by going to other families' houses or needing to be present in other things. But that's something I would really like to be present for and have that to be the bulk of the day.
I mean, certainly in my house growing up, Christmas was kind of this like really extravagant occasion, and it was like the one day a year when it was just the train went completely off the rails, and it was just like, you know, my dad turned into a real sap around Christmas time, and he couldn't see something anywhere that could possibly bring any of his three children joy without buying it. You just had to buy all the things, everything. Just there were always so many gifts. And I think that in a lot of ways, while that was really fun, while like the effect of it when you came downstairs was really like really magical and you know, helped to keep all three of, you know, us children really invested in Santa for a very long time. I think that it was also so much that you couldn't really appreciate any one thing because there was just so much. And then the second you opened it all, you then had this like marathon of events during the day. And then by the time you actually got home and could enjoy any of the things, the magic of it and the wonder of it all had sort of worn off. And you were like, oh, yeah, I got that thing. And it stopped being as exciting as when you had initially opened it. So I feel like, you know, if we really are just like, we're home, and this is what we're doing today, and here's this one special thing that is an actual activity or thing that you can do, I think that is really special. I think that's really, that makes the day probably more memorable.
At this point, we'd come to my standard final question that I put to each of my guests. Given Joe's stance on making from our conversation so far, I had felt like we had sort of covered it already, but I asked anyway, and the response that Joe gave stunned and delighted me.
You are not what I would classify as a traditional maker. I wouldn't call you someone who is a maker. There are few things that you make, and they're not often things that you make with your hands, but they're incredibly valuable and helpful and have allowed our family to be a family. So, that being the case,
I make dinner.
You do make dinner. That's true. You make dinner almost every night of the week. So in that way, you are a maker. But you're not a hobbyist.
But also, again, I make the food for my own enjoyment.
Yes.
And I'm glad other people enjoy it. But that's not why I make it.
You're really drilling home this. Like, I don't do anything for other people. I just do it for me.
I find that I'm just being honest. And I think other people
are lying. Should also be honest?
Yeah. I think other people are lying when they say, I do these things for other people. Because I think deep down, they enjoy doing the thing, which is why they do it. If they didn't enjoy doing it, they probably wouldn't do it for other people.
Well, yes. So there is usually a benefit to the person who is making the thing. Yeah. Either they're being paid for it, or they get some sort of self-satisfaction out of it, or whatever. Yes, that is true. But
I wouldn't call that
necessarily like the primary enjoyment that a person gets out of something.
Not always.
It could be
I'm just saying,
the initial reason the person started making the thing, but it might not be what keeps them there.
Yeah. I'm not saying all people are lying. I'm just saying there are some people who are lying or lying to themselves.
Are you looking at me?
No.
Oh, jeez. All right. Anyway, before you interrupt me, the things that you do make, like dinner and like our budget, have tremendous value to our family and allow our family to exist and be happy and healthy. What do you think, either for you personally or for people in general, why do you think making is so important?
What's funny is the first thing that came to my mind was not what you would expect from what we were talking about.
Okay.
All right, so the first thing that comes to my mind is shared experience. Mm-hmm. And that shared experience of enjoying what that person has made and how it can positively affect their environment, either in the short or long term, which is less personal. There's a lot of personal fulfillment, but a lot of that personal fulfillment can come from sharing what you've made with others, even if you were going to make it regardless of what other people wanted. Yeah, so I would say shared experiences is what's important about making to me.
Well, that was an unexpected twist. Turns out that this conversation caused Joe to think about making differently than he had in the past, and he was processing his own stance while the mic was turned on. The following morning, as we packed the kids' lunches, he gave me some further insight after having slept on it. He explained that the motivation for making is a ratio of two different things for each person. It's partly for yourself and partly for someone else. And while his motivation is more driven by his own interest, that doesn't mean that the other side of the equation is less valuable or meaningful once the creation is complete. That shared experience he was talking about, it's not his initial motivation for creating something, but he gets a great deal of satisfaction from it. So I guess he isn't that different from the rest of us after all. And now I'd like to tell you about something I made this month. I started making it a few months ago and will keep on making it until June of 2019. And to be fair, it's something that my husband and I are making together. We're growing our family and having a third child. This makes our budgeting even more critical heading into 2019 as we move around numbers and figure out how to make room for a fifth member of our family. This means some big changes ahead for the Tierney family, and I'm so excited to have one more tiny person to share all of these inspiring and empowering stories with. Thank you for continuing to take this journey with me. Well, that brings us to the end of this month's episode. You can find show notes and other extras for all of the show's episodes over at htmamcast.com. Find us on Instagram at How to Make a Memory. If you've enjoyed this episode, please consider heading over to iTunes to rate and review so more folks like yourself can find the show. How to Make a Memory is a member of the Geek End Legion podcast network. Our logo is by Becky Carpenter. Our music is by Chuck Salamone. We get system admin support from Greg Thole. Now, go make something for someone you love.